The Youth's Instructor, May 11, 1899. The Resurrection of Lazarus, Part 7. The Youth's Instructor, May 11, 1899. The Resurrection of Lazarus, Part 7. By raising Lazarus, Christ gave unmistakable evidence that he was the sent of God. However humble his birth and appearance might be, he was the mighty God, the everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Who can fathom his longing desire to save those who had no mercy for themselves? He longed to give these deluded, fanatical people, whose fathers he had led through the wilderness, an evidence of his divinity, a display of his power, that would lead them to accept him. But he knew that, though as the result of this miracle, many souls would afterward be added to the church, the hearts of others would be steeled against him and his work. Looking over the past, Christ saw how, during the record of 1,000 years, the Jews had abused their precious privileges. God had borne long with his erring people. In visible glory, he had dwelt in the Shekinah of the mercy seat. He had sent his Son to redeem them, but in a short time, they were to show to the heavenly universe, to the worlds unfallen, that they had chosen Satan to be their leader, and were determined to cherish his attributes. Satan's best allies are those who will not come to the light, who stubbornly refuse all evidence, and the Jews had long been working in these lines. They would soon make the words of John the Baptist, "Ye generation of vipers," true in every sense. They would break every God-given command, thus demonstrating the truth of Christ's words, "Ye are of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning, and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar, and the father of it." Bethany was so near Jerusalem that the news of the miracle was soon carried to the city, and in a few hours the Jewish rulers were in possession of the facts. A meeting of the Sanhedrin was at once called to decide what should be done. The priests were convinced that the miracle had been wrought by the power of God. They were greatly impressed, for the Holy Spirit convicted them of the sins which they had committed against Christ. But they closed their hearts, lest the beams of the Sun of Righteousness should shine into them. They stood behind an impregnable wall of unbelief. They were determined that they would never receive Jesus of Nazareth as the Messiah. Now that his influence had been strengthened by this wonderful miracle, their hatred was, if possible, increased. They were more than ever determined to put a stop to his work. No misinterpretation could be placed on this miracle. It was a work above criticism. They decided that Christ's work must be stopped, for already many of the Jews had received him. Though not favorable to Christ, the Sadducees had not been so full of malignity toward him as were the Pharisees. Their hatred had not been so bitter. But they were now thoroughly frightened. They did not believe in a resurrection of the dead. Producing so-called science, they reasoned that it would be an impossibility for a dead body to be brought to life. Thus, they showed themselves to be ignorant of the Scriptures and of the power of God. But by a few words from Christ, their theory had been overthrown. Lazarus had passed under the control of death. For 4 days his body had lain in the grave, Yet, at a word from Christ, he had risen to life in the presence of many witnesses. But this miracle did not open the eyes of the Sadducees, for they were blinded by prejudice. They could see no possibility of removing the impression made on the people by the miracle, for in no way could they prove it to be a deception. Thus far, they had not encouraged the plan of putting Christ to death. But after the resurrection of Lazarus, they decided that only by his death could his denunciations against them be stopped. The Pharisees believed in the resurrection, and they could not but see that this miracle was an evidence that the Messiah was among them. But they had ever opposed Christ's work. From the first, they had hated Christ because he did not exalt them and their boasted righteousness. Instead, he has said to his disciples and to others, "I say unto you, that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven." In his Sermon on the Mount, Christ had defined the far-reaching principles of the law of God and had shown that its requirements do not consist in outward show, but in holiness of heart and life. This Christ placed far above all outward observances. He outlined the qualities that all must possess who would win the approbation of God. In his scathing denunciation of the labored theology of the Pharisees, Christ said, "In vain they do worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. They bound upon others heavy religious burdens, from which, however, they excused themselves." Christ laid bare their avarice, their ambitious, intriguing plans for the priesthood, their exclusiveness, which led them to build a wall of partition between priest and people.